to Quilter TVX Markets Uncut podcast, a weekly insight into the topics and trends we've been exploring for you here at Quilter TVX. Remember, so you don't miss future episodes, be sure to hit the follow button on whatever streaming platform you're listening to, and by following QC Weekly Comment on LinkedIn. I'm your host today, Andrew Jones, Investment Manager at the London office. And this week, I'm pleased to be joined by Richard Carter, our Head of Fixed Income Research and our Macro Expert, and Maurizio Caroli, who'll be adding some Roman sunshine, and he is our Energy and Mining Specialist Analyst. So good morning to you both. I think the interesting thing of what's happened over the weekend really is things that didn't happen. The US didn't invade Iran. Keir Starmer didn't resign. The New England Patriots didn't win the Super Bowl, and Wales didn't win the rugby. However, Japan did, or did not in fact, get a new government. Richard, do you have any thoughts on that, on the political situation in Japan?
I mean, I guess it was a very convincing victory, Andrew, for the Prime Minister, for Takeuchi. I mean, it pretty much gives her, you know, kind of carte blanche to crack on with her policies. She's won more than two-thirds of the seats in the lower house, which I think is the first time they've been able to do that since the Second World War. So it really was a very convincing victory. I mean, so far, it's been taken as good news. I mean, she's got this sort of tax-cutting plans, investment plans. She wants to, I think, see Japan sort of march out a bit more on the world stage. She's kind of seen that before, although she, you know, if she wants to change this sort of pacifist constitution, that's a different step that she wouldn't be able to do even with this majority. But in terms of markets and the economy, it's pretty good news. And stock markets have reacted well. The danger going forward, I guess, is that Japan's got some pretty eye-watering kind of government borrowing levels. They don't want to play too fast and loose with that, otherwise they might end up with another repeat of the kind of Liz Truss mini budget kind of scenario, where you get a weaker currency and rapidly rising bond yields. But for now, they seem to have it under control. So yeah, taken very well by Japanese markets.
Yeah, she seems to be extremely domestically popular. It seems to be the reverse of our sort of loveless landslide that that Keir Starmer achieved only 18 months ago, though it seems like quite a lot longer ago than that now. I also saw an interesting picture of her sitting next, her grinning, sitting next to Margaret Thatcher. Now, I presume that was a waxwork, but do you think where would you sort of put her in terms of the spectrum? Is she a neo-Thatcherite?
I think she would like to be. I mean, I think I have to be careful, you know, sort of pontificating on Japanese politics a little bit. But I think she's obviously something new and refreshing in a country where they've had sort of fairly sort of dull bureaucratic figures. And suddenly you've got someone who's actually a bit like the Prime Minister in Italy, who's got, you know, a bit of character and has managed to retain some popularity. But she is fairly new to the job. And as we know, with politicians here and prime ministers here, that popularity can wear off pretty quickly if they're not careful. So, but certainly she seems to be, Thatcher seems to be a bit of an idol of hers.
Yeah, as I said to Maurizio in a conversation in the week, events, dear boy, events, as Macmillan famously said, that's probably what will overtake her. She's also pretty hawkish about in geopolitical sense about China, isn't she? So it'll be interesting to see whether there's any scope there to sort of to rattle the slightly uncomfortable consensus we have at the moment. Okay, so thanks for that. Another uneventful, quiet week, really. I mean, the S&P 500 hardly moved last week, so nothing to see there, really, unless you look under the bonnet, of course.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you just looked at the headline level, you would think it all quiet last week for sure. Clearly, there's been this huge rotation going on underneath the bonnet, as you say. The whole sort of AI tech led boom has sort of run into the sand a little bit. You had this release of the Anthropic AI model. I pretend to know exactly what I'm talking about when it comes to AI. I'm just a sort of guilt person at heart, obviously, Andrew. But they released this new AI model, which made people worry about the future of some of the, software companies, all the rest of it, who have been making good money in the last few years, and whether they'd be challenged by the whole AI, the whole new AI situation. And then there's also companies like Amazon who have been spending huge amounts of money, or will be spending huge amounts of money on AI investment, whether they'll ever see a good return on that. So yeah, some huge rotation going on under the bonnet. Fortunately, whilst there were some losers, there was also some winners, particularly Maurizio's kind of old economy sectors, which are now taking the lead and kind of seem to be the place to be at the moment.
Good. Okay. Well, I certainly find everything to do with AI pretty terrifying, really, being something of a dinosaur myself. So I think anybody who works in the professional industries is going to be very nervous about what the next decade may hold. So I mentioned very briefly that Starmer didn't resign. I think the US political situation is one that's had a fair amount of coverage, really. I noticed that. That sterling is a little bit weaker starting the week, and of course gold was something which definitely did move last week. Again, very big swings. I'd really like both of you to say something on this for me, Richard. Obviously, in terms of the macro factors which are driving gold, and then Maurizio on the sort of the future of gold in general being very much part of your area of competence. So I mean, as I say, gold went up, went down quite strongly. I think it was about 12% fall, peak to trough at one stage. I think it's now down about 7% on the since those peaks.
Yeah, should I comment on that first? I mean,
Yeah.
clearly there's huge volatility in it, and an enormous amount of speculatory kind of activity which is driving this. And whilst it's still seen as a safe haven, when you're seeing these sorts of massive moves intraday, it does make you question what's going on a little bit. I mean, I kind of get the whole worry about the US and the dollar debasement and what Trump does and how unpredictable he is, and the fact that they might, or they are, kind of putting the pressure on the Federal Reserve. So that's a worry, and I do understand why that would encourage people to move perhaps out of dollars into things like gold and to diversify away, which seems to be happening. But the but that's all kind of rational and understandable. But that's kind of the actual moves itself seem to defy all logic. Although I think I'll kind of defer to Maurizio on that one.
Thank you, Richard. Now, as you very correctly said, the level of volatility in the gold price has been very high. And the strength, and let me try to rationalize a bit and to give some, at least some firm facts. The strength of the price of gold in recent years has been determined by a number of factors, and six are the main ones. The first one are the geopolitical tensions. The second one is the interest rate cuts. In fact, gold does not yield any interest, so decreasing interest rates make it more attractive in relative terms. The third are the strong purchases by central banks in an effort to diversify their reserves, as well as purchases by private investors aimed at long-term capital preservation, either in the forms of bars or of jewelry. The fourth reasons are the positive inflows in gold-backed ETFs, particularly in recent months. The fifth is a more or less fixed mining supply of the metal combined with growing demand. And last but not least, the high levels of public debt across the world and the consequent perceived fiscal risk. Now, longer term, it remains to be seen if the continued strength in gold price represents an underlying trend or attempt of partial de-dollarization and/or debasement of the global fiat currency financial system. The fact that gold price has unusually risen despite the fall in inflation might point in that direction. The Quilter Cheviot House view is that the dollar will likely remain the global reserve currency, but diversification may occur. Also, it has to be noted that gold has broken in the past couple of years the traditional inverse correlation with real interest rates, and this deprives analysts and commodity strategists of one of the few imperfect tools to forecast future expected returns for gold. Let me also spend, if I may, a moment on gold equities. Gold equities historically, to invest in gold equities, better, to invest in physical gold has been historically much more profitable than investing in gold equities. And this,
Maurizio, can I stop you for one second?
Yeah.
Just to clarify for the audience, by gold equities, you're talking about mining companies and
Yes.
gold rather than gold ETFs and gold companies of that nature.
Indeed,
Great. Thank you
indeed.
for clarifying that.
And the reason why gold equities have underperformed physically gold in the past is because of the gold company's habit to squander cash in acquisition and unprofitable projects. Also, there is a second reason, the fact that mining of gold is technically very difficult and prone to production suspensions. And also, third, a reason is because employees, suppliers, and hosting governments try to have their part of the pie when gold price rises, decreasing gold miners' profitability. That said, since past summer, gold equities have started to outperform physical gold, again, a rare event in history. And this has been caused by the sharp widening of the spread between gold price and cost of production, a consequence of the very sharp increase in gold price, which obviously benefit greatly cash flow production. Gold price is today around $5,000 per ounce, whilst the cost of production is still just below $2,000 per ounce. So, to conclude on this topic, the level of volatility in gold and gold equities is likely to continue to be rather high.
Okay, thank you. In terms of the gold equities, which of the global miners have got the biggest sort of exposure to gold? Have the gold forms the biggest part of their mineral portfolio?
Okay, the large diversified miners usually don't have
Yeah.
any significant exposure to gold. So there are a number of specialistic gold miners like Barrick Mining or Newmont Mining that produce mainly gold.
Okay, thanks. And finally, before we leave gold, do you think the expectation that Kevin Warsh, the new Fed chairman, is likely to, as they say, run the US economy quite a bit hotter, as in tolerate a greater degree of inflation? Do you think that's going to add further fuel to the demand for gold?
It may be, but frankly, the reality of the new Fed chair appointee, monetary policy, is likely to be tested, and therefore we need to see what will be in actual terms going forward. I think it's still too early to how say to consider his first remarks as an actual policy implementation commitment.
Okay, thanks. Thanks. That's very useful. Now I'm going to torture my theme of things that didn't happen even further. But I think this is a relatively obvious thing that didn't happen. We both know what we're talking about. The merger between Glencore and Rio, which
Yes.
didn't happen.
Yes, so no, indeed, it's a very good point. And Rio Tinto and Glencore, as many people may have already heard, announced past week that the discussions for a potential merger, which were initiated earlier in the month, in January, have been abandoned. This is not what many people were expecting on a probability basis, but this is the very nature of M&A activity, frankly. Let's try to untangle a bit what happened. During the merger negotiations, Rio Tinto wanted to retain both the chair and the chief executive roles. Furthermore, according to Glencore, at least, Rio Tinto's offer did not adequately value the company, i.e., a sufficient takeover premium had not been offered. And these are the two main causes for the breakup in the negotiation for the merger. Both companies come out of it a bit bruised. Rio Tinto felt it needed to diversify away from iron ore and increase its exposure to copper, courting Glencore twice in the space of 12 months, but failed to successfully implement the transaction, albeit, to be fair to them, showing financial discipline, a difference with the poor acquisition of Alcan in 2008. As a consequence, Rio Tinto investors are now left with an aftertaste of some strategic vacuum at the company. Given that it was the second time in a combination that a combination was attempted in the last 12 months, and that the former Rio Tinto chief executive was understood to have left Rio Tinto because of its opposition to the merger, the combination is now likely over for good. And anyway, for 6 months under the UK Takeover Panel rules, Rio Tinto cannot rebid. Let's see now, where does all this leave Glencore now? Glencore, in his statement, says that it will simply continue with its existing strategy to expand its portfolio of assets, copper, etc., and to benefit from the strength of its marketing, i.e., the commodities trading business. But investors are left with the clear impression that Glencore management was probably too demanding in the negotiations. It is likely that Glencore will now implement its own internal M&A, possibly IPOing its coal assets in Australia, and maybe doing partnership deals for some of its individual mines and greenfield project, similar to the 40% minority stake sale announced a few days ago for its two copper mines in the Democratic Republic of Congo and agreed with a US government-backed corporate vehicle. I suspect that BHP might consider to bid for Glencore, albeit the probability of doing so is, in my modest opinion, rather low. To finish my comment, let me say that it is very likely that the wave of M&A activity in the resources sector will continue. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Maurizio. That's very useful. So we'll watch out for developments on Glencore and Rio with some interest. And I certainly think that copper is probably the most attractive of the industrial metals at the moment, given the demand that the electrification of the world is likely to engender. Okay, so I think we'll probably leave it there. One sort of observation from me, which Richard might or might not want to comment on, in terms of things that don't happen, is I noticed with some interest, and I don't want to start a conspiracy theory going here, but the bookies are currently offering evens on the next UK general election to happen after 2029. Which has some fairly major constitutional implications, but I do tend to look to the bookies for predictions on political goings on. Do you have any comment on that, Richard, or would you rather gloss over that?
So when does the next one needs to be done by 2029? They're offering odds on it being delayed beyond 2029.
Correct. That's my understanding of the odds. Yes, you get sensible looking odds for 27, 28, but 29 or later is evens, which in my understanding would be unconstitutional postponement.
It would be. Whether that includes 2029 is the option, I don't know. But yeah, that would certainly be strange. I think at the moment the risk is that Starmer doesn't get through the week as the next prime minister. Whether that would lead to an early election, I doubt very much. But it's always
exactly. Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, thank you all. Thank you very much for that and for your insights. And thank you to all our listeners for listening. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. We love to hear from listeners, so please review the show on whatever you're listening and share with it on your socials and tag us at Quilt Achieviot. We'll be back next week, and in fact, I'm in person back in a fortnight. In the meantime, head over to our website, quiltachieviot.com, where you can read the accompanying market overview, as well as subscribe to our weekly comment newsletter. You can also stay up to date with all our thoughts on markets, industry news, industry insights, and upcoming events and webinars on our website or on our social media pages. If you have any questions, or you'd like to talk to one of our experts for our next podcast, simply ask them via our weekly comments page on our website. We'd love to hear your questions. And that's it for today. Unless either of you can think of you, Richard or Maurizio, can think of today's overwhelmingly important. What's overwhelmingly important about today? No, you're not. It's an entirely unfair and probably somewhat unprofessional question. It's my birthday today, so many happy birthdays, many happy returns to me. And thank you all for listening. See you next time.
This podcast is marketing material, not investment advice or research material. Investments can go up as well as down, and past performance isn't a guide to the future.